inside, deep as the river.
Chapter 3. The Blink Moment. Thanks for doing this, Milo. How many times, Will? The man smiled. Right. Will's smile was a half-aborted mess. Jeff. The sound of the car running on the street mixed with Ellie's squeals as she and Anthony ran into view, rushing through the corridor, made Will antsy. He scratched his nose and tried to believe he was doing the right thing. It was difficult, mainly because he knew he was doing the right thing, but in truth, he didn't want to. Everything in her bag? He said, even though he was sure he was just repeating himself now. She doesn't like carrots, and she's gone off bacon in the past couple of weeks. Not sure why. If you need me, I'll be on the numbers I gave you. Both mobiles work, and I gave you Jack Crawford's number, right? Yeah, you did, Jeff said, smiling an understanding smile. It made Will feel like a terrible person. He avoided looking at it. Good. Okay. He hung around the doorway, listening to the children run and bicker.
Tony, don't!
He heard, then a thump and a laugh. He swallowed. Okay. Well. We'll be fine, Will, I promise. I'll feed the dogs. I'll keep everyone safe, Jeff said. The man looked as if he wanted to clap Will on the shoulder for reassurance, but knew better of it. She won't leave my sight till you're back. At the risk of sounding like an asshole, that doesn't make me feel any better. Jeff frowned worriedly, opening his mouth as his eyes flickered towards the street. Are you sure you want to? Don't ask me, Will bit out, wrapping his arms around himself and shaking his head. Don't. I have to. It'll only be a couple of days. 3 tops. There, interview, report, back again. Easy. Jeff didn't say anything, just stood with his hand on the doorframe, his other with its thumb through his belt loop. He licked his lips and avoided Will's eyes. Will wondered if he looked as manic as he felt. You're leaving her, his conscience supplied. You're leaving her, you're leaving her! It'll only be a couple of days, he repeated, forcing his arms down. And I'll call. Will you be in if I call? We might need to go out for groceries or whatever, but I'll keep my phone on me at all times. Just call my mobile, all right? Yeah, of course. Will, don't, please. I know what you're... He stopped harshly, mouth snapped shut as he rubbed at his eyes. I have to go. The plane leaves in an hour. We'll be waiting here for you when you get back, Jeff said, finding Will's gaze and holding it. Okay, Will nodded. Okay, I'll say goodbye then. Could you get her for me? Anthony and Eleanor were rounded up, Jeff picking up his son with a grin and an, Oh, who's been getting beat up by girls again? While Anthony squawked in indignation. Ellie ran to her father, arms out. For a moment, Will had a terrible thought that it might be the last time he ever saw her. It was fleeting and irrational, but painful enough for him to scoop her up and hold her tightly, eyes closed.
Daddy, we found snails in the back garden, she was saying. And Tony put one on my face. It was yucky.
He did, huh? Will tried his best to sound normal as he stroked her curls.
Daddy, the lady's waving at you.
Will turned to see Agent Starling by her car, waving up at the house. As he watched, she patted her wrist where her watch sat. Will nodded down to her. Okay, he said, sitting Ellie back in his arms so he could see her face, her little legs on either side of his waist. Dad's got to go now, but I'll be back very soon, and I'll call you, okay? I'll speak to you tonight, in fact. That'll be nice, yeah?
You're going on a big plane, she grinned, patting his jacket. I want to go on the plane, too. Whoosh!
She stabbed up with her hands.
I want to go on a big plane, too.
I'll take you next time, Will said, unable to hide his grimace. Sorry, honey. I'll have to put you down. I have to go now.
I can see you on the phone?
She asked, looking at him with a seriousness that seemed out of place on a toddler. For a stunning second, Will couldn't reply. She looked just like Hannibal. You can't see people on the phone. He shook his head as he put her down, staying hunkered by her.
But Mr. Milo has Skip!
Skip? Will frowned. Oh, Skype. Right. I might not have that where I am, but if I do, then yes. I will see you on the phone. She smiled, grabbing him by the cheeks.
Should I kiss it better?
Yeah. Will did his best to smile in return. I'd like that. The drive to the airport was quiet, even though he could feel Agent Starling next to him, itching to open her mouth. Will stared out of the passenger seat window, watching the flowing beach lands begin to give way to small shops, then more built-up residential, then the flat, commercial district heading into Miami. After half an hour of no radio, and worrying himself sick about leaving his only child in order to gallivant off across the country on a fool's errand, Will spoke up. "You just have to ask." "Excuse me?" she said, sounding a little wary. "I said, you just have to ask." He turned in his seat and looked at her. "I can hear your mind ticking over. It's very distracting. I'd rather we just got this over with." "All right," she said, "no nonsense." "What did she test?"
"Why is everyone always so interested?"
Will asked, as if talking to himself.
"You said it was okay,"
she pointed out, eyebrows raised, eyes trained on the road. "Alpha, a week ago."
"Glad?"
"Not sure yet."
"Most parents would be," she pointed out.
"Maybe." Will glanced over the idea. Hannibal would have been so proud. They did it at school, the test. Never used to be so casual. Remember when you had to do it as an inpatient?
"Yeah,"
Starling said as she slowed for the lights. "Scared the crap out of me. My parents hauling me off to a hospital. I thought I had a disease." That garnered a quiet laugh from Will, brief and bitter. He looked at Clarice Starling, knowing full well that he was staring.
"Is there something you want to ask?" she asked.
"No," he said, knowing what she would have expected. "Not really." The conversation withered as they approached the airport. Will watched the planes fly out overhead, seeing the wings ready to take him far from home. The car was parked messily in the driveway, the door half closed behind him as he hurried up the short steps to the entrance, key shaking in the lock. He slammed it behind him just for the joy of the violent act. The front room was chill without the fire lit. Will stalked between the furniture, right hand to his hip, left to his mouth. The sound of approaching footsteps told him Hannibal had been preparing to leave. It was the only time he wore shoes in the house. They stopped by the doorway. Will kept his eyes to the floor as he paced.
"I don't want to work there anymore."
A sigh. It made Will's hackles rise.
"Am I to presume Purnell or Conrad this time?"
Stop second-guessing me!" Will bit out, distressed, trying to rein his temper back in. He refused to look Hannibal in the eye. "You don't need to pick anyone out. They're all the fucking same. Every single one of them. Sneering behind their smiles and their good mornings. I can't stand it. If I hear one more quip about me being on a damn leash, I'll crack. I swear I'll do someone a damage. The bunch of two-faced bastards can take their job and shove it."
"I have told you on many occasions that my lawyers are more than capable."
"I don't want a fucking lawyer!" Will shouted, glaring at Hannibal, hurt, frustrated. "I want to do my job! What are you going to do? Sue everyone on the payroll at Quantico? For Christ's sake! I'm talking centuries of bigotry and you're talking about lawyers. I don't want to work there anymore," he said with clearly delineated anger. Hannibal pursed his lips, running the car keys in his hand through his fingers, eyes trained on the sofa. Will felt like a fool, but was too angry to care.
"I merely do not want you to do something rash which you will regret."
"And don't I get to make that decision?"
"You love your job, Will."
"I love you," Will said without thinking, and hesitated when Hannibal's eyes flicked to him, sharp and calculating. "And I love us being together. My job, my damned job, can take the back seat. I could work from home, start writing again. I've always been a better teacher than a field agent. Harris, you remember Harris, right? He said the journals are always looking for new forensic papers."
"I think it would be best if you slept on it. See how you feel after some rest."
"Rest?" Will scoffed, hands on hips as he rocked back on his heels. "Shit, a rest? If a decent night's sleep would miraculously stop Hatcher calling me a leashed bitch when he thinks I can't hear him, I'd gladly go for it."
"He said that of you?"
Hannibal's lips thinned, his eyes narrowing as he stared towards the bright window. "Oh, if you like that, you'd love some of the others," Will muttered. "I want out of there, and I don't want to wait this time. The longer I wait, the more chance I'll never do it at all." He watched Hannibal approach him with a sense of fight or flight. Will squared his shoulders and tried to look stalwart, even as his instincts told him to make himself look small, lean his head slightly to the left to bear a little more of his neck.
"You're not afraid of him," he told himself sternly.
It was futile. Will knew on some level that he would always fear Hannibal, even as he loved him. Hannibal stopped before him, reaching up to take hold of Will by the sides of his shoulders. Will allowed himself to be pulled into a slow embrace. The frustration and the anger and the worry and the fear melted, leaving only the need to curl closer. A strong hand stroked smoothly down his back, rubbing small circles along his spine. Will let out a pent-up breath, his forehead coming to rest on Hannibal's shoulder.
"Did you take your suppressant therapy this morning?"
The suddenness of his fury was a little sickening, so much so that Will was silent as he pushed away from Hannibal, the other man letting him go without a fight. He caught sight of Hannibal's resigned features as he stormed from the front room, heading for the stairs.
"Will."
Hannibal had followed, standing in the lobby. "You're a classic case," Will spat, stopping halfway up the first flight, tone tight with anger. "You know that? A classic case. Just like the rest of them, only you're worse. Want to know why?"
"Why?"
Hannibal asked, humoring him.
"Because they're just a bunch of hypocritical morons that couldn't think for themselves if the world depended on it," he said without a hint of sarcasm.
"And you're the love of my fucking life. So maybe you could think about that next time before you ask me if I've taken my meds, because I can barely stand their bigotry, Hannibal. I don't think I could stomach yours."
"I did not mean to imply."
"I know exactly what you wanted to say," Will said, lips thin as he nodded. "Because I'm 2 weeks from heat and you think I'm overreacting. Just a stupid little fit. Must be my time of the year, yeah? Well, you can just fuck off with the rest of them. Of course I took my damn pills. You think that's what I want? To be a slave to my damn hormones? I'm not a child!"
"I do not appreciate your tone, nor your insults."
Hannibal lifted his chin, eyes cold.
"Oh, I'm sorry. Did I offend your delicate European sensibilities?"
Will was unable to stop himself, walking back down the stairs, slowly, one by one, hand trailing the banister.
"Would you prefer I just kept my mouth shut, huh? Did as I was told?"
He stopped in front of Hannibal, eyes alight with ire. Hannibal seemed as stone, cold and still.
"Would you like that?"
One hand lifted to grab a fistful of Hannibal's immaculate gray jacket, causing the man to seize Will by the wrist, pulling it free and holding his wrist tightly. Hannibal did not react further than that, his face clinically set.
"Is that what you fucking want?"
Will asked, eyes creasing. His other hand was caught as he made to grab again, Hannibal easily holding him at bay.
"Is it? You want me to sit there and yes, Alpha, no, Alpha, anything you damn well want, Alpha? Because you've picked the wrong man, all right? The wrong man. I know what I want. It's you that doesn't know what they damn well want."
"I want you to be happy," Hannibal said seriously, face impassive and inscrutable.
"Why?"
"Beg pardon."
Hannibal let go of his wrists when Will pulled back.
"I asked you why," Will said, rubbing at the reddened skin.
"It shouldn't be that difficult a question, but I'm beginning to wonder if it is. We've been married nearly 3 months. I want you to tell me, why the hell do you want me to be happy?"
The muted sounds of traffic from the quiet road outside, the early evening birds singing in the cherry trees in the garden, the sounds between them as they stood, facing each other.
Will wrapped his right arm along his waist, holding onto his left elbow. The clock ticking in the lounge became abrasively loud. The quiet seemed only to accentuate his chuff of derisive laughter.
"Right," he nodded.
"Right. You know, I shouldn't have even. I think I'm going to be at the cabin for a while."
"I would rather you stayed," Hannibal said, eyes fixed on the door frame.
"Then maybe you should give me a reason to."
"What do you want?"
"What?"
"You have spent the last 15 minutes castigating me for not knowing what I want," Hannibal said, watching him calmly. "But you have not said what it is you want from me."
Will watched him, simmering, hating that Hannibal always managed to turn his arguments back on Will himself, that he managed to stay so icily calm. "And just what is it that you want?" he asked himself. "Just what is it that you need?"
"What I want?"
Will shook his head, feeling suddenly drained.
"You know, that's such a big question. I don't."
"Just say it," he thought. "Just bloody say it."
"I saw something today."
He hesitated before plowing ahead. "It wasn't anything special. Just a family out with their kids at lunch. Little girl, big smile on her face. Mom and Dad on either side, swinging her back and forwards, and I thought..." Will swallowed.
"I've never wanted something so badly in my life."
"A family." Hannibal paused after a cautious pause.
"Love," he clarified, his smile pained. "I want you and me. I want kids. I want a life where I don't have to worry about looking so far down into the madness that I deal with every day that I become it before I even realize what's happened. Before I wake up with blood on my hands and no idea how it got there. I don't want to be stuck in that rut any longer, doing what I'm told and being bitter and cynical and hating myself for putting up with it. I want to make us happy." Will sat down on the stairs, running his hands through his hair. Before I screw up the one good thing I have. Slow steps. Hannibal sat down next to him, straightened out his rumpled jacket. He put his elbows on his knees and sniffed, his lip hitching momentarily upward in a familiar twitch. Will felt his hesitation, even though to look at him no one would guess he was anything but utterly composed. "Then that is what I want." "Don't patronize me," Will sighed, shaking his head. "That is the last thing I wish to do," Hannibal explained, turning to look Will directly in the eye. Will forced himself to hold the stare. "You ask me why I want you to be happy. It is because when you are happy, I am happy. When you are happy, it gives me hope. When you are happy, I feel I have a reason to be a good man. My aunt and uncle would have happily gifted me some morose girl from good breeding stock, a wealthy background, like my father had before me, and his before that, I am quite sure. I am not one to follow with tradition." Will heard the placation there, not one to follow conventions of class and all that came with it. "You make me a better man than I ever hoped to be. That is not something I wish to lose." Speechless wasn't an adjective he thought had ever been applied to him before, but it was appropriate now. With bells on. Hannibal took his hand and they sat on the stairs, looking ahead. The clock chimed in the lounge and Will swallowed. "So," Hannibal said, "should I drive you to the cabin?" Will shook his head. He ran his free hand through his hair and down the back of his neck, rubbing at his shoulder. "You wish to stay here?" Will nodded. "Then I suggest you stop taking your suppressants," Hannibal said, drawing Will's gaze, "and I can help you compose a letter of resignation that will be suitably watertight. Legally, you understand." He took a shaky breath and let his hand drop to his lap. He felt as if he'd been put in a washing machine with fear, hope, sadness, and anger in equal measures, and had come out dry on the other side. There was a welling sense of relief simmering in his gut. "You want me to stop taking the therapy? How else are we to have children?" "Hannibal, believe me when I say I am not a man to compromise lightly. I am not saying this simply to placate you. Personally, I think I will make a wonderful father."
"You're so modest," Will laughed, stopped, covered his mouth as he laughed again, the relief churning to a happiness he wasn't sure how to handle.
"Then we're going to do this."
"It seems so."
Hannibal smiled his subtle smile.
"You are going out," Will cleared his throat.
"Before I... Will you be late?"
"It can wait. I feel I have more pressing issues."
"Oh?
Very important pressing issues."
"Pressing?"
"Very much so."
A kiss that stole what little breath he had left.
"Upstairs?"
"Most certainly. I believe practice makes perfect, as they say." Will laughed as he was picked up bodily and carried up the stairs. Being objective, it seemed, had no place here. Happiness, he thought, was an utterly subjective art. "Could you drive me to the hotel?"
"Jack asked me to bring you to HQ," Starling said, as they picked up the rental car from Baltimore Washington International.
"Jack didn't ask you to do anything."
Will smiled tightly as he opened the door. "He told you to bring me to Quantico, and you can tell him right back that I'm not setting foot in the building. They can come get me from the hotel."
"I don't think that's..."
"You know we're still at the airport," Will pointed out, looking at her over the top of the car. "I could catch a flight back to Miami in an hour." He'd come to realize that Clarice Starling's range of facial expressions were rather limited, more than likely entirely on purpose. She looked mildly interested, but utterly blank. Will guessed, under her professional mask, she was fizzing, wishing she didn't have to ferry this uptight asshole halfway across the country. Will knew, because it's what he would have thought if he were her.
"All right," she said eventually. They got in the car. "I'll let Jack know."
He was left on the doorstep with a phone number, the time of a meeting the next day, and a room number. The porter took his bag, and Will allowed himself to be guided through the relatively nice hotel. His room turned out to have one of the pleasanter views, if the bellboy was to be believed. Out over the harbor, Will thought he could see Fort Henry out on the point, the cars ferrying back and forth below them like ants by the glistening water.
"Can I get you anything, sir?"
Will was asked as he stood by the window peering down.
He turned.
"Oh, no, thank you." A reasonable tip exchanged hands. The boy looked mildly pleased with the amount. Will was just glad he wasn't staying long. The room was clearly a suite catered to Omegas. Jack's doing, he was sure. The man was always overly cautious on Will's part, In a way, he was pleased. The towels were incredibly soft. The bed was sunken into the floor. Heavy duvet, thick pillows, blackout blinds on the windows, a deep bath. Even a hilarious, if somewhat offensive, booklet in the nightstand on what to do in a slew of ridiculous situations. If the resident becomes overly emotional, or if the resident accuses you of inappropriate behavior. Will took a few minutes, lying down in the bed, and feeling absurdly comfortable, to skim through and chuckle. All the scenarios appeared to end with, "Contact the registered Alpha or your local Dynamics Center specialist." He put the book back and closed the drawer, staring up at the ceiling. Will relaxed on his back, hands folded over his stomach. The room was everything he could possibly want, and yet all it served to do was make him feel incredibly uncomfortable, different from everyone else. After years of training himself to live like a person, suddenly he felt plunged into a world catered around his status. There was a pull-out table by the head of the bed. Will set up his laptop and logged onto the Wi-Fi. It was quick and easy to set up his secure connection, and there was no surprise when he saw the set of emails sitting in his inbox. Crime Scene Report, 21-05-2014. Coroner's Report, Leeds Family, 23-05-2014. Coroner's Report, Jacoby Family, 13-03-2014. Jack had been busy, Will thought wryly. It seemed that agreeing to talk to Lecter on behalf of the BAU had been interpreted as him coming back to the team. Will was beginning to wonder how long he'd be able to convince himself that wasn't the case. They were calling him the Tooth Fairy, it seemed. Will sneered at the moniker. The press liked their nicknames, no matter how distasteful. Will reminded himself to ask Jack how they got enough information to come up with it when he saw him the next day. Before that, he clicked and downloaded the files he'd been sent. The first report he opened showed three photographs. The first a view of a large double bed. The man propped against the headboard, the woman spread out along the bottom, face up. Intermittent blood stained the walls. The second was a detail of the blood splatter, showing a shadow pattern. Someone had been in the way, Will thought, as he drifted into the familiar pattern, seeing where the pieces fit. Then the third scrolled into view, the face of a young girl, no older than 7, mutilated, her eyes shining like blank diamonds. Will closed the laptop with a swift click and took a deep breath. He stared straight ahead, holding the breath until it began to hurt. It came out in a rush, and he coughed roughly. All he could see was Ellie, dead. Ellie bloodied. Ellie calling for him, and he wasn't there to help her. After a few minutes, he managed to call room service. "This is room 728. I'd like some scotch, a bottle." "Yes, sir," the polite woman on the other end asked. He could hear typing. There was a pause. "I'm sorry to have to ask you such a personal question, sir, but to order more than 500 mils of spirits, I need to know if you're within 3 weeks of your heat."
"You need to what?" Will asked, incredulous.
"You're unaccompanied by a registered Alpha, sir. It's part of our insurance that—"
"Thanks for your concern, but I've had a fucking hysterectomy," he said acidly. "So that ought to tell you how close I am to my next heat. Can I have my goddamn scotch now?"
"Yes, sir." She sounded mortified, but Will didn't have the energy to care. "Of course."
He hung up with enough force to jutter the phone across the table. "Fucking stupid piece of shit," Will seethed. He'd read about the mayor of Baltimore, a traditionalist, a down-home alpha with his head stuck in the sand. In simpler terms, an utter bigot, always passing new policies just to make life difficult for those he saw as abnormal. Omegas without alphas to keep them in line. He hadn't known that it had gotten this bad. It suddenly seemed a hell of a lot longer since he'd been here. He sat back down on the bed, his eyes closed. Behind them, the little girl's face blasted up, blood and pale skin and eyes like mirrors. Will forced himself to open them again. He decided to call home, even though he'd only been gone 5.5 hours by his watch. The Skype bleeped and the symbol danced. After a few tries, he managed to get through.
"Will, hey!"
Jeff's smiling face put Will at ease. "Sorry, I was in the kitchen. Didn't hear the ring. How was your flight?"
"The usual," Will shrugged.
"Bad food and tight seats."
"Sounds about right," he said with a short laugh. "You want Ellie? She's in the living room. Hang on, I'll take you through."
Will watched as the room on the laptop tipped as Jeff lifted it, carrying it through the house until the diagonal perspective of two children on a sofa watching television came into view. On seeing the computer coming, Eleanor looked up, eyes wide. "Hey, hon," he could hear Jeff say. "Want to speak to your dad?"
"Yeah!"
she said excitedly, getting up as the picture finally stopped moving, placed down on what Will assumed was the coffee table.
Ellie's face wobbled into view, her big eyes not seeming to know where to look.
Hi, Daddy!
Hey, Pumpkin, Will waved. How are you?
We're watching cartoons,
she said, eyes looking up where Will assumed the TV was.
It's Space Spa.
Space Race, dummy.
Will heard Anthony's voice from off screen.
I know what it's called, Anthony,
she practically shouted. Hey, Ellie, come on, don't shout, Will said loudly. You're a guest in his house. Be nice. Ever since the results of her test had come back from the dynamics department, Ellie had been developing a worrying superiority complex which Will was taking pains to temper. He could have murdered Miss Jenny for filling her head full of garbage about class systems. She'd even taken to bossing Anthony around, convinced that her, only just registered, alpha status gave her free rein to order around the betas. Will just hoped that she wasn't doing the same thing to Milo. The man was too accommodating and he knew how worried Will was about her. Will knew Milo would let her get away with anything.
I know what it's called,
she huffed, pouting. Will's throat clenched.
Daddy, are you coming home? We're having crab cakes.
Not tonight. 2 days and I'll be back, I swear.
Okay,
she said, voice small, fiddling with the keys on the laptop, eyes looking away, her mouth hanging open a little.
Will you be here tomorrow?
Will smiled, unable to help himself. No, not tomorrow, honey. Friday. I'll try and be home by Friday.
Okay,
she said again, rubbing clumsily at her cheek. You be good for me, okay? Be nice to Anthony and Mr. Milo.
I will.
Good girl. I'll see you real soon.
Bye, Daddy.
Bye. The room seemed cold and quiet with the connection closed. Will realized it had slipped to late evening without him noticing. The room was painted in shadows, the last of the sun throwing a brazen orange glow onto the walls. Will lay back and looked at the ceiling once more. After a few minutes, there was a knock. He took the scotch and tipped the woman, hoping it hadn't been the woman from the phone. Pouring himself an unhealthy helping into a deep tumbler, Will sat before his laptop and opened Crawford's reports. One by one. Her words were cold and clinical and entirely realistic. Come to Baltimore. Interview Lecter. She hadn't minced her words, which he was begrudgingly grateful for. Most of the people Jack sent to badger him were less agents and more politicians, always thinking of an ingenious new way to ask the same thing over and over. Starling was refreshingly pragmatic and blunt. Will appreciated that. The sounds of the CD player in the bedroom were faint as the coffee percolator bubbled. Some cheap compilation of stories he'd bought Ellie in a supermarket last year, playing nursery simple tunes behind an overly dramatic voiceover. Agent Starling, looking out of place at his shabby dining table in her neat suit, didn't comment. Will didn't upset the apple cart. If she wanted to pretend this was all perfectly normal, then he'd go along with that. She had outlined the case, one he'd already read about in the papers, even down in Key Largo. Still, he made it plain that he understood why she was here. Because for Will Graham, it was not about choosing to suffer, but suffering through a choice. He just wasn't sure, as he poured the painfully green Agent Starling a bitter cup of coffee in his Florida kitchenette, whether this particular choice would be painful or affirming. "And what exactly makes you think I'd be any help?" he asked. "Because you know him better than anyone," she said, sipping politely. "And because, personally, I think you're the reason he ran in the first place." He'd give her points for creativity, but as far as he was concerned, she had a lot to learn about the inner workings and desires of Dr. Hannibal Lecter. "That's one way of interpreting it." "It was 5 days before his trial, and you were only 20 blocks away at St. Martin's Hospital. It seemed obvious why he made an escaped attempt." "Oh?" Will said, raising his eyebrows sarcastically as he handed her the coffee. "So you're in that camp, are you?" "I'm sorry? You think he was coming to get me, right? Escape, grab me, fly off into the sunset? I'm guessing you also think he was putting the knife down, too." "You don't?" Starling asked, a slight frown creasing her perfectly smooth forehead. "There were 7 armed SWAT officers and an FBI HOD pointing guns at us in our kitchen," Will said. "I didn't exactly have time to think about whether he was putting the knife down or getting ready to slit my throat."
"But you have sense then, surely."
"I don't think you came all this way just to get my opinion on that, did you?" Will asked acidly. "Unless Chilton sent you. Frederick Chilton?"
"I've met him," she nodded.
"He has about $1,000 resting on nurture, not nature."
"I've heard," she nodded. "I read his paper, posting that Dr. Lecter was hardwired to turn into what he was. but that his marriage and bonding to you changed that. It was a compelling reading. I'm sure it was, Will said. It is true that out of the 35 murders he was eventually convicted of, none were performed after he met you. Sorry, did you come here to dig up my private life, or did you want my opinion on something? Actually, these are relevant questions, Starling said, po-faced. It's important for me to understand your relationship. I'll be in the interview with you. I have to be able to read the subtleties in his inflection, body language, eye contact. No. Will took a long sip of coffee and shook his head. No, she asked, frowning. You can't be there. No one can be there. If I'm talking to Hannibal, I'm doing it alone. Mr. Graham, Will, please. Will, she nodded. This isn't an option. Try telling that to Dr. Lecter. He understands the parameters. No, he understands how far he can push you. Little by little. Let me guess. He's already swindled something out of you. Italian poetry, maybe, though it could be a set of charcoals. Starling didn't react. No. Will narrowed his eyes and thought, biting at his lip as he watched her. He knows you're desperate. He'll have pushed for something difficult. Something that will have pissed Chilton off. So something messy. Self-drying clay? He asked for clay, didn't he? Yes, he did. And you got it for him. Yes, we did. Mistake, Will said harshly. You're first and hopefully you're last. Let me put it this way, Agent Starling, Will said, sitting down and talking sternly. If you ever feel like you're two steps ahead of Hannibal Lecter, try looking up. He'll be off to your left, waiting to flank. If you think you've outsmarted him, tricked him, you're always wrong. You've met him? She nodded strongly. I have. Then he knows you. Always remember that. He knows you better than you know you. Didn't Jack tell you any of this? He warned me Dr. Lecter has an incredibly keen mind and ability for memory unlike any psychopath we've ever dealt with at the BAU. That's not because he's a psychopath, not really. Not in the clinical sense. He's not crazy. He did some hideous things because he enjoyed them. Because he liked it. So if he's not a psychopath, then, how would you define him? I wouldn't, Will said, looking her in the eye. I wouldn't dare to. But you would, it seems. Be careful of that. Labels can be deceiving. She cleared her throat and took a drink of her coffee. A set of loud waves rolled onto the shore, awake from someone's speedboat, no doubt, making the dogs bark. Will whistled, settling the barks to growls, then whines, then the sound of laughter as he heard Ellie run through and start harassing the dogs.
Bad doggie! She was calling. Bad doggie's no barking!
She's a sweet kid, Starling said with a small, tight smile, as if she didn't know what to do with her mouth. How the hell would you know? Will asked dryly, making Starling look away frustrated. I suppose small talk is out of the question. Jack really didn't tell you anything about me, huh? I'm starting to wish he'd given me a little more to go on, yes. Typical fucking Crawford. Will sat back in his chair and cradled his coffee, enjoying Starling's seeming knee-jerk reaction to defend her boss. She reined it in, taking a drink from her mug instead. Throwing rookies in at the deep end. Did he pull you from training for this? Yes, though I was only 5 weeks from my finals. Shit. Will shook his head, closing his eyes to rub at his eyelids. Hannibal must have been disgusted. Being interviewed by a rookie? Starling sounded jadedly offended. No. Will shook his head. That Jack would send you into the lion's den without even a knife to defend yourself. You can have all the theory in the world, Agent Starling, but it won't save you the way experience and intuition can. Hannibal knows that. He isn't fond of other people's casual disregard for life. Even after taking so many himself? Oh, Will smirked. Those weren't casual. For Hannibal, they were necessary evils. Then you have profiled him, Starling said, as if she had figured out something bizarre. Of course I have, Will said. He's the father of my child. I've read the case reports. I've seen the crime scene photographs. Hell, I used to teach classes on the Chesapeake Ripper before we were married. And it doesn't bother you? Of course it fucking bothers me, Will laughed. Starling looked at him like he might be mad. But I loved him then. That always makes things difficult. Past tense? She asked, watching him bluntly. Yeah, Will replied quietly, turning his mug round and round in circles on the table. Past tense. Difficult to stay in love when your spouse cuts people in two for amusement. Then you'll join our investigation? Starling changed the subject, while not truly changing the subject. Will silently applauded her for pulling it off. "If my neighbor can take Eleanor, then I'll come with you," Will nodded. "But I'm not joining the investigation. I'm coming up to speak to Hannibal for you. Get you the information you need if I can, and that's it. Not saying I'll be able to, either. Hannibal isn't one to be played." "Then I'll inform Jack," she said, nodding. "May I use your phone? Mine is in the car." "Sure," Will said with a sigh, handing over his mobile. "Whatever you need." The room was warm and dark, not because of lack of light, but more due to the dark wood furnishings and wall plating, heavy curtains and low wattage bulbs. Will sank into his chair, uncaring of his slouch. Starling had already commented on his appearance when she arrived to pick him up at the hotel. "You look rough. Get any sleep at all?" He hadn't been able to answer her. It would have been too depressing. Almost as depressing as being in this room, he thought. They had been there for all of 10 minutes before Chilton began primping. "I understand that you have already briefly met him, Agent Starling, and it may seem gratuitous to warn you, of all people, about Lecter," he said to Will. "But I must impress upon you both that he is very disarming. For a year after he was brought here, he behaved perfectly and gave the appearance of cooperating with attempts at therapy. As a result, this was not under my advisement, of course. Security around him was relaxed. On the afternoon of July 8, 2013, he complained of chest pains. His restraints were removed in the examining room to make it easier to give him an electrocardiogram. One of the attendants, now no longer employed here, went out for a smoke, and the other turned away for merely a second." Chilton paused here, as if for dramatic effect. "The nurse was very quick and strong. She managed to save one of her eyes." So far, Will had only been half listening. He was too busy noticing how much lower his chair was than Chilton's, giving the illusion of height and superiority. Also, how the man displayed his diplomas on the walls on either side of his chair, like flanking guards. Lastly, that Chilton had something green stuck in his teeth, just within eyesight when the man smiled. Even for Will, who hated to stereotype, Chilton was a shining example of the underachieving beta who dreamed of wanting more. Wanting what his betters had. Bizarrely, he thought, wanting what Lecter had before his incarceration. Power, influence, and respect. Will knew he was staring into space. Agent Starling was quiet. When Chilton didn't get the reaction he expected, he continued. "You may find this curious," he said, pulling a strip of EKG tape from the drawer and unrolling it on the desk. He tracked the spiky line with his forefinger. "Here, he's resting on the exam table. Pulse 72. Here, he grabs the nurse's head and pulls her down on him. Here, he is subdued by the attendant. He didn't resist, by the way, though the attendant dislocated his shoulder. Do you notice the strange thing?" "Oh, I noticed the strange thing, all right," Will thought as he stared down at Chilton. "And it's in the room with me right now." "His pulse never got over 85, Chilton said, leaning back to steeple his fingers, "even when he tore out her tongue." Will stayed blank. It wasn't difficult. If Chilton thought he was in any way intimidating or awe-inspiring, he was dead wrong. Truthfully, Will was using the man as a calming exercise. He would need it before speaking to Lecter. "So you've had sessions with Dr. Lecter." Starling, seated next to him, was doing a good job of not sounding disturbed. He knew she was, utterly. But she was still doing a bang-up job of keeping it professional. It made Will smile to see Chilton put out by the united front of apathy to his little anecdote. "Yes." Chilton cleared his throat. "Several. He's impenetrable. Too sophisticated about the tests for them to register anything." "It's because he knows them all inside and out," Will said. "No pun intended." "How droll," Chilton said, with a smile that didn't reach his eyes. "You see, we're woefully short on a perspective on him. Edwards, Fabre, even Dr. Bloom has had a crack at him. He is an enigma to them, too. In fact, the consensus around here is that the only person with any practical understanding of Hannibal Lecter is you." "What, because we lived together for a couple of years?" Will asked, unimpressed. "I was thinking more of the bond you share," Chilton clarified, as if it were obvious. "In fact, it is not only Dr. Lecter we've been looking for a perspective on. I mean, we're always looking for a fresh angle on male Omega psychology, and yours is such a unique case that—" "We really are here just for the official visit," Starling cut in when Will stayed quiet. "Of course, of course." Chilton backed down with a short laugh that said he knew when he was being stonewalled. "Dr. Bloom was very severe with me on that point when she heard you were visiting. We're to leave you alone. So be it." He paused before leaning forwards, arms crossed on his desk, speaking slowly. "But I am curious, just on this last point. Maybe you can help me. When you saw Dr. Lecter's murders, their style, so to speak, were you able to reconstruct his fantasies? Did you ever work out whether you were part of them? I've always wondered. The man appears to have the patience of a saint when it comes to planning the perfect act of violence. I wonder whether your aborted death that afternoon was to be a culmination of all the planning that had gone into marrying you, bonding with you even. What do you think? Too obvious for his usual Machiavellian schemes?" When he tasted blood, Will realized he had bitten through the inside of his lip. The pain barely covered the spiraling fury churning in his gut. He thought, for a moment, that his vision might have dimmed. Will unclenched his jaw and looked to Agent Starling. She seemed to understand the situation. "If you don't get me out of here right now, there'll be another murder to add to your spree." She smiled demurely and stood up. Will followed her lead, stiffly. "Thank you for your time, Dr. Chilton," she said. "But we'd like to see Dr. Lecter now." They were led to an elevator, in which they went down with an escort. A silent man with graying hair, skin the color of gritty coffee. Will felt as if he were descending into the bowels of something waiting to devour him. At the very least, it put him further away from Chilton. It wasn't a long ride, but it was enough. "I was upstairs," he said, while they waited for the doors to open. "When I was brought here. For a month." "I didn't ask," Starling said. "No, but you were thinking it." She didn't reply. While Starling checked in her weapon with security, Will stared through the glass plate in the heavy security door. The corridor beyond was stark white, so much so that it was difficult to see the delineations. Enough to drive anyone mad, he thought. The steel door of the maximum security section closed behind them with a subtle boom. The bolt slid home. As they walked, Will found himself wondering trivial things, such as if Hannibal still liked to sleep in. He'd always done so at home. Any chance he got, he'd take the late shift at work, sleeping until lunchtime. "I'd make lunch and take it up," Will thought, opening the curtains just to see him hide his eyes. He knew which cell was Lecter's, not because there were two chairs placed outside, but because of the pulling sensation in his gut as they walked closer. It hadn't been noticeable until they got beyond the security door, but now his neck itched. His palms began to sweat. His breathing became difficult to control. By the time they reached the cell, dimmed to a dull light, he had to focus solely on how to put one foot in front of the other. When he deviated towards the bars, he thought he heard Starling say something about, "Behind the line!" But he couldn't stop himself. He felt as if he were falling from a great height as he leaned against the bars on his right shoulder, his left hand grabbing the steel tightly. He ignored Starling, only barely stunned that she hadn't hauled him bodily away from the bars. He was sure she was curious, at least a little, as to what Lecter would do. Will managed to clear his head by focusing on how momentarily sickened he was by her. She had heard Chilton's anecdote, too, after all. Dr. Hannibal Lecter lay in his cot, eyes closed. His head was propped on a pillow against the wall. Alexandre Dumas's Le Grand Dictionnaire du Cuisine was open on his chest. Will knew he was not sleeping. After a few seconds, his eyes opened, staring upwards at the bland ceiling. "That is atrocious aftershave," he said. "I keep getting it for Christmas," Will quipped quietly, knowing he was understood. Ellie had picked it out when he'd taken her to the department store. She liked it because there was a ship on the bottle. When Hannibal rose from the bed, it was with all the leanness of a predator. Will remembered when he'd seen nothing but grace in the man's movements. It was difficult to separate them now, his memories and the reality before him. As he approached, Will found his eyes and held them. The wonderful maroon glinted in the strip lights from farther down the hall. When the palm reached out through the bars and touched his face, Will closed his eyes and sagged. "Oh God," he thought. "Oh God, I need you to—" There was no place for shame in his mind. He did not think about Starling or the camera Chilton surely had trained on him, yet had not called the guards. Chilton was just as bad, surely willing to risk Will's safety for a chance to see their dynamic for himself. He did not care about anything much as he took hold of the hand and turned his face into the palm, drawing in the rich scent. It spiked straight up his spine, sending a myriad of intense and confusing signals to his brain. Everything tingled. So long, too long, far too long. His body didn't seem to know what to do with itself. Part of him wished to calmly walk to his chair and sit down. The other half wished to crush itself through the bars until it could be gathered into his alpha's waiting arms and drag in the heady scent he knew would be strongest at Hannibal's neck, where the gland secreted the desirous smell. Instead, he had to make do with the wrist of his right hand, running his nose across the sensitive flesh there, hot and slightly bitter with a perfumed edge like cloves and aspic. He felt the fingers on Hannibal's hand twitch against his cheek. Will tore away with the intensity of an attack, as if his logical mind had simply pulled his emotions out by the socket. His footsteps were rigid as he walked to his chair. Ignoring Starling and ignoring the chill of absolute repulsion that ran along his shoulders, both from Lecter's touch and Will's own inability to resist, he sat down and sorted his jacket. He could feel Hannibal's eyes on him. Then a small, decorous laugh emanated from the cell. Will cleared his throat and looked straight ahead, avoiding Lecter's eyes.
"Dear Will," he said with dry humor, "how I have missed you."